Hello and welcome to another episode of The Damage Report with me, John Iderola, and much more importantly, Jessica Burbank returns.
More Jessica, importantly.
How's it going?
It's going well. It's great to be on.
It's great to have you here. You're in a new room and it looks very shiny.
It's so shiny, but very inexpensive.
That's good. That's good. I love that you tend to move around. It gives you life experience in a lot of different contexts, which I think is very helpful. I've been in this LA bubble for a long time and I have no idea what life is like outside of it. So I'm glad that we have you as an ambassador to the rest of the world.
The TYT ambassador abroad, which is just, North Carolina.
That's pretty far. That's pretty far. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's been a bit since we've had you on. What have you been working on recently?
That's a great question. Two things. We're working on a podcast where we can talk about monetary policy in the United States. There seems to be a demand for that. We're calling it Funny Money. We're trying to make sure the copyright isn't owned by anyone else, but that's what we're going with for now. That's with Andres Bernal, who's a professor at SUNY. And then there's a Substack happening where I write about monetary policy as well. So a lot of monetary policy.
That's awesome. Exactly. Glad to have you on for that because I can pretend to understand a little bit of it. By the way, I understand why you're concerned about the copyright and stuff, but there's a billion podcasts and blogs and everything. Yeah. Can we just have the same name as other things now? Is that okay?
I feel like it should be okay. We're gonna run out of names.
Exactly. When we were launching this show, we went through so many different names and it's like, well, that Twitter account is taken and that Instagram is taken. So no, let's just everybody understands there's different things and they have the same name. There's billions of humans and growing. Anyway, very exciting projects. Everyone definitely stay tuned for those. Also stay tuned, those of you who might be tier 3 members on YouTube, for our member hangout, which is gonna be happening 30 minutes after the close of today's program. Also, before then, to launch us into the aftermath, Stephen Donziger is gonna be joining us. We're gonna be talking about the lawsuit against Chevron, the house arrest, the appeal to the Supreme Court, East Palestine. We got a lot that we're gonna be talking about. So definitely stay tuned for that as well. And along the way, if you wanna send us any comments, tweets, super chats, or possibly questions for Mr. Donziger, feel free to do that. And any particularly insightful or witty comments give you a chance at winning a Blue Apron gift card for $100. So definitely get those comments in. All that said, Jessica, ready to talk about some news?
I am ready.
Good. And we've got some good news coming up, but not yet. Let's jump into this.
You actually look at the bill and it says no sexual instruction in grades pre-K through 3. And so how many parents want their kindergartners to have transgenderism or something injected into classroom instruction? And so I think those are very young kids. I think the legislature is basically trying to give parents assurance that, they're going to be able to go and this stuff's not going to be there.
That was the argument that they made when they were pushing for Florida's Don't Say Gay bill. Hey, it's just K through 3. Get off our backs. Isn't that so reasonable, everybody? And I don't know how many people bought that at the time. We understand how these things go, but it turns out they're going that way, way faster than maybe we would have even predicted, because already DeSantis and his administration are pushing to expand this for all grades everywhere, all the time, not K through 3. We're talking about full on teens. Teens that we give some rights to are going to be forbidden for discussion and learning, education around sexual orientation and gender identity. And all of this is preceded in like a year, maybe. The expansion is already happening. Jessica, what do you think?
Who could have seen this coming? Definitely not anybody here. Turns out it's not about grooming kids. It's about the oppression of LGBTQ plus folks. I couldn't have predicted it. You couldn't have predicted it, John. This is a surprise to us.
Yeah, 100%. By the way, it's probably needless to take this little road stop, but their argument, even if they hadn't expanded it, was BS. Like the idea that this is necessary, that we need to stop education, which is largely stopping adults from being able to be who they are because of concerns about grooming, were always BS. It wasn't happening. It's not an actual problem. Even in that form, it was a needless culture war to gin up the right wing base. The expansion is another way that they're doing that. And it's gonna be high school and it'll be college eventually. Grad students, PhD program aren't gonna be able to learn about this stuff. And so here is the actual text of the bill. for grades 4 through 12, instruction on sexual orientation or gender identity is prohibited unless such instruction is either expressly required by state academic standards or is part of a reproductive health course or health lesson for which a student's parents have the option to have his or her student not attend. It would ban classroom instruction on both sexual orientation or gender identity in pre-K through grade 8 and would not require any employee or student to refer to another person using their preferred personal title or pronouns if it does not correspond to that person's sex. Proposed legislation would also make the statewide public school policy that it is false to ascribe to a person a pronoun that does not correspond to such person's sex. And can we just pause briefly on this? Because I love how obvious and quick the hypocrisy is revealed. So initially they say, how dare you make me say this thing? And it has already developed to, you cannot say this thing. Like literally, if the kid wants this pronoun, if the parents want the pronoun, if the teacher wants the pronoun, you can't use it. So this has moved so quickly from just being about controlling kids and giving new rights to parents to no adults or parents have rights if those rights in exercise would result in you saying something that I don't like. Thoughts?
Yeah, this is, I don't want to say hilarious because it's not hilarious. It has real consequences. But initially the conversation was like, why do these woke Nazis want to police our language? And now it's like, you want to get the law involved. All we were saying was, you know, please call people by the pronouns that they would like to be called by. So sex and gender, not the same thing. If you want to call someone by the parts that they have and make that enforceable by law, that seems like an infringement on personal freedoms more so than the original situation. So for people who say they don't care about language and we're the policers of language, they seem to care about language an awful lot.
They sure do. And there's one other aspect of this that I want to make sure that people understand, because very often they will attempt to pass these sorts of bills by appealing to reasonable standards or whatever, academic standards. They even use that language. So it says, it states that any instruction on these topics cannot occur, quote, in a manner that is not age appropriate or developmentally appropriate for students in accordance with state standards, as if those things are objective. As if, well, we found out what is age appropriate and developmentally appropriate because it was carved into a big old rock face 1,000 years. No, they are the ones who define those things. State standards could be objective. They could be based on good academic research in theory. Do you think that in Florida, that's how it's gonna go? They're taking over the boards of colleges left and right. They're putting people in place to write those standards, and then they hide behind those standards as a propagandistic shield. That's what this is. It's more importantly, it's not popular, which we're gonna get to in just a second, but I hate they spend literally decades trying to get people to lose faith in academia, faith in expertise, you know, all of that. And then when it's convenient, they'll hide behind a fake version of it to lend like faux academic credentials to their culture war crusades.
Yeah, it's a big contrast between people on the left where we're like, you know what, people don't have healthcare. We should increase access to healthcare to address that problem. They're like, well, there are child groomers. We're not going to tell you who they are or where they are, but we think they're in schools, and so we're going to pass legislation so that you can't use pronouns or hang LGBTQ plus flags in the schools. It's all about pushing their way of life on other people, and it's getting to an extreme at this point. And Florida is a dangerous place because DeSantis' whole platform, he hasn't announced he's running yet, it's to make America Florida. So this is what we can expect with the DeSantis presidency.
100%. Yeah, make America Florida man again. It'll be entertaining, I guess, for local news. Might not be great for most people. And to any conservatives in the audience, I understand that you don't care about how dishonest or hypocritical they're being. You don't care that they've rapidly expanded this. You wanted it to be expanded in the first place. But I will try to remind you, pointlessly, yet again, like, when you face medical bankruptcy, when you're having to work as a Walmart greeter until you're 79 years old or whatever, it is going to provide little solace that thousands of miles away, people you've never met don't get to use the pronoun that they want. That's my prediction. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that will warm your heart. I don't know. Anyway, that said, Ron DeSantis, as Jessica was alluding to, clearly wants to make America Florida. And he is going to export his culture wars to the national stage. But will that actually work for him? Now, we can analyze this on multiple levels. It is possible that it could work for him in a Republican primary. It is possible he can score some points among the MAGA base by being more like vociferously like cruel and constantly filled with rage towards the LGBTQ community than Trump. But is that going to help him in a general election? The polling doesn't really seem to indicate that that's the case. I want you to take a look at this recent poll from YouGov, looking at a lot of Ron DeSantis's proposals. So this is polling people across America. What do you actually think about these? Now, there is, regrettably, tragically, one topic where they do tend to agree with them. And I hate that this is the result, but 52% favor banning transgender female athletes from playing on women's and girls teams at public schools. I hate that thus far they've been winning in that rhetorical battle. But to be clear, on all of these other signature things, including requiring books to be reviewed and then banned, schools and businesses being banned from imposing COVID-19 mask or vaccine requirements, the bans on critical race theory, gender studies, intersectionality, a lot of these different things, his position on abortion, all of that. These are wildly, increasingly unpopular policies, which seem like it's gonna be difficult to run a national general election campaign based on. What do you think, Jessica?
I think I'm gonna draw on my background in data science and polling here. That first question, they said transgender females in the language, which is confusing because transgender, not trans sex. So if you're talking about females who are transgender, this is someone who was born with the sex of female and transitioned into identifying as a man. So you're saying female can't, or female transgender people can't participate in women's sports. So that's a weird question, because I think what we hear about on the news a lot that conservatives are up in arms about are athletes who were born as males and then are transgender and identify as women and want to participate in women's sports. So just the wording of that question throws me for a loop, but I do think that this entire poll shows that no, DeSantis's platform is not popular publicly among the entire country, but we know that the Electoral College doesn't always give us the president that is the popular candidate to choose.
That is true. Yeah, in terms of language, the transition from what DeSantis and right-wing advocates say to how YouGov mentions it, I don't know exactly how that works. I will also say that one of the things that always complicates it is that the people most driven by this war against the broader LGBTQ community or transgender people individually also seem to know the least and be the least curious about literally every aspect of this. That said, oh, but and by the way, like he might be able to say like, hey, I won in Florida. I can deliver Florida. Recently, the Republicans always win Florida. That's not even that big of a change. Can he win Georgia? Can he win Pennsylvania? Can he win Michigan? These sorts of states, that's what it, where it matters. And again, not so sure, because when YouGov told respondents that he had done these things, these are the things he's actually done. That's not disputable, he has. How does that affect your vote on whether you'd support him? Among registered voters, the number who said they will definitely not vote for DeSantis went up 3 points once they realized that, while the number who said they definitely will vote for him fell by 3 points as well, which effectively put DeSantis at the same position in terms of electability as Donald Trump. And that's before a lot of people around the country even really know who Ron DeSantis is. And that's before what could end up being a nearly year-long process of Ron DeSantis needing to constantly, on a daily basis, exert so much cruelty and radicalism to defeat Donald Trump. He has to get past him first. How does his reputation in a broader sense survive that sort of war? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think it will. This is a guy who very recently, I think as recent as last week, said, you know, I grew up in Tampa Bay, but culturally, my family was working class. It represented Ohio and Pennsylvania. That kind of statement is not gonna fare well in a lot of swing states where the voters are middle class, working class people. He uses language that's extremely alienating in a way that Trump doesn't. So I don't know how he'll do at the national level, especially with Trump.
100% viciously attacking him, oh man. including just in the last day. Trump accused Ron DeSantis of killing a 100-year-old World War II veteran with the COVID vaccine. Jeez. Anyway, with that said, let's move on to one other aspect of the story. While Ron DeSantis and his allies are in this 24/7 attack against the LGBTQ community, there are some people who are thankfully pushing back with accurate information, which we need more of in American politics. Take a look at this.
In the past week, there have been 17 arrests or convictions of adults accused of having sex with children. Of those 17, 14 were pastors or youth pastors at Christian churches. One was the husband of a youth pastor. One, a police officer. None were drag queens.
Those are some inconvenient facts for the right-wing narrative around grooming and child predation being provided by Kristen Broud, an attorney who provides these sorts of facts and others on TikTok on a regular basis, listing the people who have actually recently been accused of sex crimes. Her point in this overall series of videos is to push back on the narrative that either drag queens or the trans community or whatever are trying to abuse kids. There are people who have for a very long time been trying to abuse kids. We tend to look the other way when identifying who they actually are. Now, she says that her posts are responding to the nationwide panic over LGBTQ people being around children, perpetuated by obviously people like Tucker Carlson or libs of TikTok. The series has shown that with politicians and tabloids screeching about transgender people and drag queens, they're looking in the wrong direction because those are not the people who are abusing children, not in the slightest. Let's go to a little bit more of one of these videos.
Week four, and it's the big churches making news. The Archdiocese of Santa Rosa, California declared bankruptcy, buried under child sex abuse lawsuits. The Archdiocese of Oakland facing 300 lawsuits, considering the same filing. The Archdiocese of Baltimore, a federal judge, considering whether to release a report containing the names of 158 priests accused of hundreds of sexual abuse crimes against children. And the International Church of Christ accused of a massive cover-up of child sex abuse. Now, of course, there were the individual arrests too. We tracked 46 of them. Here are the numbers. We have 4 Christian pastors, 2 Catholic priests, 1 Mormon missionary, 1 church employee, and 3 teachers, 2 of them at private Christian academies. There's also 2 police officers and 1 doctor. Nobody trans. Nobody who is a drag queen.
Weird that those sorts of facts, and that's just a brief period that's obviously being analyzed there, but you can see patterns like this going back literally decades or hundreds of years inside the United States and a number of different countries, that doesn't often penetrate into the national discourse, Jessica.
Right. And I think this demonstrates that it's pretty clear what the agenda is of Ron DeSantis. It's clear that he wants to live in a society where it's not okay to be queer or to be trans in public. So if I was a student in Florida, we know that they already started protesting when the initial Don't Say Gay bill was passed. They organized walkouts, they had signs. They really were not okay with this legislation passing in their state. The kids are all right. No kid is born hating other people because of their identity. I really believe that's something that's taught. And we know younger generations are more progressive than ever before. So what would I do, you know, to resist this if I was a student in public school in Florida? Well, I would start calling my teacher by their first name. Turns out titles actually matter and what you prefer to be called by. Then I would just start calling them the wrong name. Then I would say, I actually don't identify as my legal first name. I identify as this nickname. That can be hard to keep track of if it's literally everybody in the classroom. And then you escalate, you start walking out of school if they don't make progress in rescinding this really actually oppressive policy. I think the kids have a lot of say here and we'll see some resistance from them in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope so. Stoner Dragon in the chat says there's another protest on March 31st in Florida. I hadn't been aware of that, but thank you for letting us know about that. I really hope, and this would just be like a silver lining, it wouldn't make the entire thing okay, not even close. I really hope that this is not successful in convincing more than just a brief handful of the most radical young people to support this sort of nonsense. I hope that it moves them in another direction. You know, that's not a fix for the situation we're in right now. But I cannot imagine that this is really radicalizing a lot of young people against the LGBTQ community. By the way, I wanted to add on to the list that Kristen Broud was presenting in those videos. Just a reminder, by the way, of how many people had gained clout and fame, screeching about QAnon stuff and about grooming and all that. And then, oops, turns out they're the exact sort of predators that they had been warning about. You have David Trent, promoter of QAnon, spent 4 years telling his tens of thousands of followers that the Democrats are pedophiles. Oops, he was a convicted sex offender. Apparently was convicted in 1999 for child abuse. Then you have Charles Sutherland was arrested for spray painting groomer in the DC area during 2022 Pride Week, arrested for possessing child pornography. You have Deborah Sullivan, apparently known as the QAnon meme queen, which really should have been a red flag, was, as all the QAnoners are, fighting against this cabal of pedophiles. Her own son was convicted of repeatedly abusing his stepdaughter. She defended him, calling the 12-year-old girl a horrible liar. So again, save the children. But wait, which children? Are they accusing someone I care about? Not them then. And we see this, there was one of the main QAnon subreddits when those existed, turned out to be someone who was found to have had child pornography and all that. They focus so much on this for a reason, and it's not always a great reason. Any final thoughts, Jessica?
So some Scooby-Doo stuff, you know, where are the child groomers? Where are the child molesters? Oh my God, it was us all along.
Jesus, someone's gonna clip that out. Anyway, yeah, and obviously every one of these individual cases is tragic, but we do have to point out the hypocrisy of those making the accusations. Okay, with that said, we're gonna take our first break, respond to some of your comments, and when we come back, TikTok is testifying before Congress as we speak, the CEO of it anyway, not the app, that doesn't work. Although I guess AI could manage it. Anyway, we'll have some of that for you after this. Okay, everyone, lots more news to get to. And a reminder that Stephen Donziger, activist, environmentalist, author, and lawyer will be joining us at the beginning of the aftermath. So everybody prep for that. If you're just joining us now, please hit the like button so that people know that the stream is live. As we launch into our talk about the ongoing attempt to ban TikTok here in the US, starting with this.
You know, Robert, I just realized something. Republicans ain't got no swag. That's why they wanna ban TikTok. Republicans ain't got no swag, that's the problem. And I mentioned that in the context of engaging young people in the democratic process.
Okay, I can neither confirm nor deny if any individual Republicans or the party in general has or has not enough swag to make it work on TikTok. But many Republicans, and not just Republicans, this often gets lost in the conversation, there are Democrats too, are pushing for TikTok, an incredibly popular social media app, to be banned here in the United States. And that has resulted in the CEO of TikTok, Shouzi Chu, testifying before Congress literally as we speak. We're gonna give you some of that video, but you should bear in mind that they're throwing accusations about access to private information, the possibility that that information might be shared with the Chinese government, all these national security concerns and all of that. You already had Kathy McMorris Rogers, the House Energy and Commerce Committee Chair, saying that it should be banned. You have Representative Rogers going on to say, "We do not trust TikTok will ever embrace American values, values for freedom, human rights, and innovation." First of all, I'm gonna need some citations on those being fundamental American values. Anyway, TikTok has repeatedly chosen the path for more control, more surveillance, and more manipulation. We're gonna get to the CEO's testimony, but Jessica, I know that you are a prolific user of TikTok. What do you think about this ongoing campaign to get it banned?
Yeah, good luck, man. You're gonna lose the entire youth vote if you ban TikTok. And it's pretty clear to me that the reason that they wanna ban TikTok is because these folks get lobbying money from and have stock in US-based multinational corporations. And the idea of a popular media platform not being a US-based multinational corporation, although there is TikTok US, they're really upset about that because TikTok is a source of information for a lot of young people that rivals the propaganda machine that's been running for a very long time by US-based media companies that run on advertisements from America's largest corporations. It's pretty clear to push a particular narrative with that. But when you have creatives that want to just get the word out or spread some truth on TikTok, those posts tend to do pretty well. There's no advertisers that can block those. So I think that's really what's at the heart of this.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of the concerns are probably overplayed. That's not to say that there shouldn't be oversight. I mean, this is a major tech company. I think that often they're given far too much of a pass by those in power. But you also cannot ignore the element of just wanting to gin up some sort of ongoing Cold War with China and how that's influencing all of this. And probably combined a little bit with the fact that our older than the average American representatives probably find TikTok to be a relatively foreign concept. And I get that, even for me, it's, you know, I have my issues too. And I have to say that I was really against the idea of banning it, but I put up a TikTok about Trump being arrested and it didn't do very well. So now I'm on the fence. I'm willing to see what arguments are made in Congress today. And you can make changes to the app. You can suggest them. I personally think it should have a feed. I think it's really weird that you see things that are like 3 months old when what you want is, you know, news and all of that. But those are small things that they can take care of as they try to appeal to more and more consumers. I don't think they necessarily require the Democrats, the Republicans teaming up all of the Power Rangers to take them down. Anyway, with that said, why don't we turn to a little bit of the attempts by CEO Chu to reassure the assembled representatives on what is actually true about ByteDance, the company that owns TikTok and TikTok USA.
ByteDance is not owned or controlled by the Chinese government. It's a private company. 60% of the company is owned by global institutional investors. 20% is owned by the founder and 20% owned by employees around the world. ByteDance has 5 board members. 3 of them are American. Now, TikTok itself is not available in mainland China. We're headquartered in Los Angeles and in Singapore, and we have 7,000 employees in the US today.
Okay, I think that those are interesting stats. Now, you shouldn't necessarily just accept at face value what a CEO dragged before Congress says about their business operations. They have been known to stretch the truth in the past, but I don't think most people are aware of the influence of Americans on the board, the number of domestic employees. Those are important considerations. And furthermore, CEO Chu goes on to make a series of sort of like commitments on what TikTok is going to do in the future. Take a look at this.
There are more than 150 million Americans who love our platform, and we know we have a responsibility to protect them, which is why I'm making the following commitments to you and to all our users. Number one, we will keep safety, particularly for teenagers, as a top priority for us. Number two, we will firewall protected US data from unwanted foreign access. Number three, TikTok will remain a place for free expression and will not be manipulated by any government. And fourth, we will be transparent and we will give access to third-party independent monitors to remain accountable for our commitments.
So Jessica, I think some of those are good reassurances. I think there are concerns with some of them. I mean, they say that the safety of teens is going to be paramount. I mean, look, he was being interrupted constantly by people who are grandstanding and all that, but some of what they showed was interesting. There were videos sort of like encouraging suicide and things like that that were allowed to spread. That's a concern. There are tools that are supposed to limit how much teens can use it in a day, apparently are comically easy to get past. And they're talking about like free expression. I think that moderation is important and it's up to the company to do it, but they're all also pretty restrictive in what you're allowed to talk about on there. It may not be the Chinese government that's determining what you can or cannot, but there's been a lot of topics that we are freely able to talk about on YouTube or on Facebook that those videos immediately get us flagged on TikTok. So there are still concerns, but what do you think about what he had to say?
Well, John, we really like our oligarchs that run our media companies to be from the West, and that's really the main problem here. All of those things are problems on every social media platform. I mean, you have dangerous challenges. You have people whose mental health is at risk, not just because there are conversations about mental health and those weird challenges that I've personally never seen on TikTok. And I think it's probably representative of a really small proportion of the content that's on the app. And the way the hearing is going is these Congress people are like, hey, you shut up when I'm asking you questions. Like, there's no room for answers to be given or any explanation. It's just a lot of like, hey, you know what? Even though you're a billionaire CEO that's currently based in the United States and you run this corporation that's profitable off of advertising, my question is, are you a communist? It's like, what's going on? We're really sowing a lot of discontent with China in the media and in Congress. Suddenly there's an evil balloon that's here from China when there have been balloons before. Suddenly there's articles about how COVID actually did start in the Wuhan market. And turns out in that article, despite it being on the front page, there's no new research or data. And now we're having this hearing about TikTok. It's really, you can tell when they're fomenting a narrative. And I would like for social media restrictions and regulations to be there, but do it for Facebook, where misinformation is spread and it potentially influences presidential elections too.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it is convenient how these things sort of pop up, and there can be people who, like, from 1,000 miles away, their position looks similar for very different reasons. There might be people who, you know, are worried about privacy violations or whatever. I think that would be novel amongst our elected representatives that they would literally be can actually be worried about that. But then there are others that this is clearly just a convenient piece on the chessboard of a, you know, an ongoing convenient war against China. So that's a consideration as well. By the way, so one final thing on this. I find the idea that they would ban it to be very hard to believe. That said, I also thought the idea that Russia would invade Ukraine, I didn't think that was likely to happen. So I'm an idiot. Why listen to me? If it does happen, I agree with you that I think there's going to be lingering strike back against whoever participated in this from younger people. But how easy do you think and how quick do you think it'll be for it to be replaced by something comparable if that happens?
Yeah, hopefully very fast, because all of these folks who are running TikTok are based in the United States, according to his testimony. So you have people with access to the code, with the programming. You can easily make a new app with the same functionality. So I think very soon, to be honest, after it's banned.
Okay. Well, we'll see. Okay, we're gonna switch things up and talk about an update and a story that I believe we talked about last year. A little bit of progress. Take a look at this. What you just saw was security footage from within Wyoming's only full service abortion clinic, and it clearly shows someone coming in with a gas can to light a fire. The fire was set back on May 25th of last year in Casper, Wyoming's second largest city, and the site of quite a lot of ongoing anti-abortion protests. Now, that footage has been available. I believe we previously showed it on the channel before. What's new is they finally got a person. So it took a year-long investigation. There were witnesses who had heard some stuff, and there was the footage, obviously. And now Lorna Roxanne Green, a 22-year-old, was arrested on Tuesday by Casper police and agents from the FBI, as well as the US Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. Green faces up to 20 years in prison for the arson and a $250,000 fine if convicted. She's scheduled to appear in federal court on Thursday morning. Now, thankfully, nobody was injured in the fire when it was set, but it did leave damage, obviously, and it was designed to shut down access to abortion and abortion-related services in that area. So good, Jessica, that they were able to find someone. Considering the fact that their face was covered, I'm sure it was difficult, and so this is progress.
Yeah, I wasn't even aware of this until you put this on my radar, John, which is interesting because it had me reflecting on, remember when police precincts were burnt down in protests after police were shooting unarmed black men? It was all over the news. People were saying it was terribly violent. The organizers who were at those protests and who were doing things like this were, you know, in trouble immediately. We knew who they were. But when it's, you know, political violence coming from the other side, which I don't know if I really believe the destruction of property is violence. I really think violence is when you harm another living human being. But to many, the destruction of property is violence. But when you see the destruction of property for political reasons on the other side of an abortion clinic, it's not front page news. It's not something that we're talking about. I think that's really concerning because I do see healthcare, which abortion clinics provide healthcare to people who go there, who have uteruses, who are, you know, pregnant. Sometimes it's just STD testing as well. It's a public service, it's healthcare, and you're burning the building down and we hardly hear about it. I think that's an interesting contrast.
Yeah, it is amazing. Like, obviously the right wing isn't gonna talk about these sorts of things, but I feel like generally the mainstream media, which I would call the other right wing media, often just ignores it too. It's like there was a meeting, And we decided that certain sorts of places are able to be targeted freely, whether for arson or even like for protest. And protest obviously is legal, but you'll notice that if it's like a Supreme Court justice and you protest them, the media can work itself up into a frenzy. But when it's just many abortion clinics every single day being protested, that doesn't merit coverage. You can burn down a place like this and it'll receive a little bit of media coverage. But if it was a church being burned down, or if it was, I was gonna say a children's hospital, but I feel like they'd probably ignore that these days too. Yeah, it's weird where the blinders suddenly pop up for the media. And by the way, I wanna remind people some of the developments going on inside of Wyoming when it comes to access to abortion. The GOP has passed a law to ban abortion state with minimal allowances for things like, you know, rape and incest, those sorts of things. Violation of the law is a felony that carries penalties up to 5 years in prison and a $20,000 fine. And by the way, they had to be tricky in this law because the Wyoming state constitution says that people have a right to make their own decisions when it comes to healthcare. So they had to define abortion as not being healthcare in this bill. And I believe it's actually been banned now. Thankfully, Judge Melissa Owens has temporarily blocked it, but we're gonna have to see what happens long term. And their bill to ban medication abortions has not yet been blocked. So there is still, like, they have this two-pronged approach. You have some individuals going to burn down abortion clinics, and then you have their elected representatives attacking the access to the rights as well. Any other thoughts, Jessica?
Just that if you've ever been to any kind of clinic or any kind of healthcare facility that provides abortions, you might notice that now there's armed security at a lot of them. And they make sure that when you arrive there, you get out of your car safely, you enter safely, and you leave safely. So when we see things like this happen, where it's after hours, it's caught on the security camera, I think the reason that is because they've had to take precautions and invest in having security when people who are going to these clinics are arriving there. So you can imagine the kind of, I don't know, reaction or violence we would have if they weren't taking that precaution. It's really scary.
Exactly. Yeah, and like, this was a 22-year-old. Like, this person was born into a world where you had already had access to these rights for literally decades at that point, and was radicalized to believe that those rights should be stripped away two decades later. Like, look, people get to be passionate about whatever they want, but think about all of the other things your attention and passion and energy could have been put into. And now you face potentially a $250,000 fine, 20 years in prison. Was it worth it to temporarily stop people from being able to control what happens to their body? I don't think so. Okay, everybody, we're gonna take our second break of the hour. When we come back, good news for Newsmax, but not necessarily the good news that the right wing wants you to believe it is. We'll have that, as well as legal developments for Carrie Lake after this. Okay, everybody, I unfortunately have bad news. Stephen Donziger is not gonna be able to join us for the interview in the aftermath. Unfortunately, it was a travel thing. We're gonna eventually have a conversation. The same thing ended up having to happen with Marianne Williamson, but we'll make it work. And don't worry, there's still gonna be lots of awesome fun stuff to talk about in the aftermath. With that said, why don't we jump into some other news? Republicans are busy celebrating all over the interwebs that DirecTV has surrendered and allowed Newsmax back on. But the reason that they let them back on might not be exactly how Republicans are spinning it. So DirecTV has said that the new agreement would mean Newsmax would continue to be offered for no additional cost to customers, which suggests that the reason they were able to make an agreement is that Newsmax probably dropped its carriage fee request. So basically, Newsmax had already been available on DirecTV. They went to DirecTV and said, "We want you to pay us more." Apparently, DirecTV said to them, "You're not popular enough. So if you're demanding money, we're just gonna drop you." That was spun by the right wing as censorship of the right wing, when it was just them saying, "You're not popular enough to merit the money." It appears, we don't know for sure, that Newsmax has realized their actual value, which is lower than they had wished it would be, are not asking for the extra money, and so they will be available, which I guess is a win for everyone except Newsmax, because conservatives will get access to the conspiracy theories and election denialism that they love. And DirecTV gets to have the channel and gets a little bit of good reaction from Newsmax, who is saying that this shows that DirecTV clearly supports diverse voices, including conservative ones, the only diverse voices that anyone affiliated with Newsmax actually cares about. As a standalone company, DirecTV helped give Newsmax its start nearly a decade ago, as it continues to do with upcoming news networks. So that's all fine. And they're being very diplomatic about it. And in particular, if they did surrender on those provisions, I know why they would be. But people like Nick Adams, the alpha male, are saying boycotts work. Newsmax is back on DirecTV. I guess they boycotted. Did they actually boycott? Did the alpha male boycott? And then you have like Marjorie Greene saying, great news, now put OAN back on. And I don't think that this is an instance of DirecTV like bowing to the pressure or whatever. But if it is, this is a reminder that bowing to the pressure doesn't get you anything. It got you 9 characters in a tweet from Greene before she just started going back to demanding that you do more. But anyway, it is back. Jessica, what do you make of this little development?
I think the diversity of opinion that Newsmax talks about is like everything to the right of Ronald Reagan. Like that's their wheelhouse. They're like, we need people to like this stuff. But of course now I think there's gonna be some folks that are like, and DirecTV, you shouldn't have let them on because we know what these people stand for. These are far right extremists. I don't know, to some degree, you should censor Nazis. That's my stance, is that when you get into the realm of fascism, those people shouldn't have a show on cable television. But we also do know that there are a lot of people who are members of the right who have bought up local news stations and are slowly pushing stories with a particular lean to them. So I don't know, the cable news brain rot in America runs deep, and this is just giving them an extra place to step to the right.
Yeah, 100%. And look, I think the vast majority of their content that I'm exposed to is utter nonsense. That said, if they want to have it, they can have it. It's a private company. I also think that if you believe that, then the other version of that is if they don't want to have it, they shouldn't have to have it. And that is not a place that the right was willing to follow to. And I found the entire back and forth when it happened just so like, I just lose faith sometimes in our ability. Like, we want to have a debate long term about like the Green New Deal or Medicare for all. These are complex, big programs, but we can't get people to agree on the facts when it comes to why a stupid conservative network was briefly taken off of DirecTV. They had clearly been asking for money. It is not censorship to not allow them to be on. Like if I don't even think I'm on DirecTV, but if I was and I was like, you have to pay me $1 million a day. Oh, you're not? This is cancel culture. That's madness. And by the way, Rumble's not paying me to produce content, but they're implying that if you don't get paid to do something, then your rights are being stripped away, which is clearly not true. And they would never apply that to anything other than right-wing media outlets. And so this should be very easy intellectually to figure out, to lay the groundwork for a conversation on. And we collectively were not able to do that, which sucks.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts?
Not surprised though. I think we've just created this idea that having your own opinion is really just living in your own reality. You can't boycott something if it's not even on television. What is the story there? That actually it was Newsmax boycotting DirecTV. So a company boycotting a company they're partnered with, that's not a boycott. Were you boycotting Newsmax because you weren't watching it? It wasn't on. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, the idea, I guess, is that they canceled their DirecTV, which just, I consider myself a principled person, but that seems like a whole big thing. I mean, I don't have DirecTV, I don't think. But yeah, it just seems, I don't think that it happened. By the way, everyone is free to boycott whatever they want. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But I also, like, I feel like that should be your standard then. Either you think boycotts are legit or you don't. And that's not how these right wingers actually address them. Okay, that said, we do have one other topic to get to with the little time that we have remaining in this hour. Apologies to everyone, it does involve Carrie Lake, so prep yourself mentally for that as we launch into this.
They have built a house of cards here in Maricopa County. I think they're all wondering what I'm gonna do. I'll tell you what, I'm not just gonna knock that house of cards over. We're gonna burn it to the ground.
It's important that you invoke the imagery of January 6th as much as possible as an election denier. But anyway, look, that's Carrie Lake, and she is fired up. She's clearly confident despite not being governor. I love pointing that out. So clearly something must be going on, and it wasn't hard to figure out what it was. She tweeted out, huge. AZ Supreme Court rules in favor of Carrie Lake, using the third person. I guess everyone on the right does that now. Forces lower court to look at signature verification issues. Oh no. After months of legal defeat after legal defeat. Oh my God, the tide is turning. They're going for Carrie Lake. Unless you consider the context of what actually happened. Because yes, something like what she tweeted did happen. But it was one of many things that happened in her most recent legal, but like the claims that she put forward. She had made 7 legal claims. They were all adjudicated. 6 of them were dismissed properly, according to the judge, by lower court. So she lost 6 out of 7 of the claims. Weird that she didn't find room to fit that in her tweet. That doesn't look like 180 characters to me. But anyway, those claims that were struck down include that tens of thousands of ballots were injected into the election. She called that an undisputed fact in her lawsuit. They found a way to dispute it, as well as alleging that problems with tabulation machines disenfranchised thousands of voters. That also was found again to not be true. The one that she won on was her 6th legal claim, which has to do with Lake's allegation that Maricopa County did not follow signature verification procedures. That must now receive a second look by a county judge. The county and appeals court interpreted Lake's signature related challenge as applying to the policies themselves, not how the policies were actually applied in the 2022 election. And they dismissed her claim based on grounds that she filed her legal challenge too late. But that was an error, according to the AZ Supreme Court, noting, quote, Lake could not have brought this challenge before the election. Importantly, and I say this both to the audience and also to Carrie Lake, who I know is a big fan, the Supreme Court did not evaluate whether her signature claim had any actual merit, just that the way that it had been adjudicated in the prior court was not true. And it also quoted the appeals court ruling saying that to prove her claim, Lake must provide, quote, a competent mathematical basis to conclude that the outcome would plausibly have been different, not simply an untethered assertion of uncertainty, which is clearly what she's working with right now. So this is a brief spot of sunshine legally for Carrie Lake amidst a whole lot of defeat. And even this is unlikely to go anywhere. Jessica, what do you think?
It's fascinating, especially when you consider what election turnout looks like for elections in the United States lately. 54%, 60% at a really high turnout election. For states where we're not voting for a president, it can be lower than that. So for Carrie Lake to be fighting this signature thing, the ballots in which signatures need to be compared are overwhelmingly the mail-in and absentee ballots, which we know lean Democrat. So there's a reason she's focusing on those, is because it's not, hey, I got more votes than they counted, or there were votes of mine that didn't get counted. It's, we need to take away some of theirs, which is always the Republican agenda when it comes to voting rights. This is why they don't want to make voting easier for people, because they know that they are unpopular as candidates. And Carrie Lake is unfortunately a sore loser.
Yeah, about the sorest loser. And she's still going on with it. Like, and that's fine. That's her right or whatever. But what should happen, if there was balance in the force, if nature was healed, she would make these absurd claims, which is her right, and then everyone would point and laugh at her. That's how this should actually work. But unfortunately, while many people are laughing at her, I do it at least once a day, not everyone is. And so if you go to that tweet of hers that I showed you, there are tons of people who are like, yeah, you're my governor, you're gonna win. No, she's very much not. She is never gonna occupy the governor's mansion, at least not until another intervening election. She might become Trump's VP or whatever. And so she'll be able to take her experience of claiming to have won and apply it to claiming to have won with Trump when they lose in 2024. I hate to see so many people encouraging this sort of stuff, Jessica.
Yeah, but she's such a good storyteller, John. She gets on that mic and it's like she's telling a children's story. The next line, she doesn't even know what's coming out of her mouth, but it's a horror story nonetheless. We're talking about dark forces conspiring against us. It's very captivating.
Yeah, it's probably the sort of stories that I'll someday hopefully tell my kids. Anyway, with that said, that is all the time we have for the first hour of our show. We were gonna come back to an interview with Stephen Donziger, which I've been really looking forward to, and unfortunately we don't have that for you. That'll be coming, but we do have a lot of amazing news, including news about the war on porn, about AI, and far more. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.